This hour of Cairo Nights is brought to you by kpbilliards.com.
Broadcasting live from the Carter Subaru Studios, you're listening to Cairo Nights. Happy Thursday. I am G. Scott, the Online Trading Academy text line. It is 989-73. We're going to be talking about the tiny houses over there here pretty soon. But before that, I didn't even see this little bit of news. I was just kind of share this with you. Earlier tonight, CNN's New York offices and studios had to be evacuated due to a phone threat that was there. Somebody sent them a phone call and said that there were five bombs that were in there. Several fire alarm bells rang inside CNN's New York newsroom. This happened at about 10:30 at night, so it'd been about 7:30 our time. Right now, the all clear was given for CNN offices over there, so everybody's allowed to go in. But Don Lemon of CNN, he had to leave and get evacuated from that show. So the all clear was given, and now they're in CNN. They're outside and kind of doing interviews and everything. So kind of a scary situation, I'm quite sure. I couldn't imagine being at work and being like, oh, bomb threat, and then maybe a possibility of it happening again. I mean,
and then having to go back to work.
See what I'm saying? Like that right there, man. Woo. I don't know. But glad everybody's okay. Glad no bombs went off. Just want to let you know what was going on at CNN. Now, if you've been following the development of the tiny house villages in the parts of the state, you know, it's been met with some serious opposition, particularly right here in Seattle. Now, the city of Seattle and the Low Income Housing Institute have a new lawsuit over its latest tiny house village in South Lake Union. The pair are being sued by Safe Seattle, a nonprofit group seen as a watchdog when it comes to public safety and government accountability.
Suing Lehigh, the Low Income Housing Institute, and the city of Seattle for operating these tiny house villages without proper permitting and without doing the things they need to do to run what are, in effect, assisted living facilities. We're asking them to provide their operations plan, as they agreed to do in their contract with the city of Seattle and have not done. We are asking them to get permits for these structures that they're housing people in, and we are asking them to do all the necessary requirements to ensure that they are providing an adequate standard of care to the people living in these tiny houses.
Now, that voice you heard was David Preston from Safe Seattle. He says he hopes the lawsuit will shut down the tiny village on Aloha Street. He also says the lawsuit has implications for other low-barrier tiny villages the city and Low-Income Housing Institute are running across the city.
At last count, I think there were nine. They're spread around the city of Seattle. There's one in my Highland Park neighborhood called Camp Second Chance. There's one in the North Lake neighborhood. There is one in the Licton Springs neighborhood of North Aurora. And there's one in the Whittier Heights neighborhood of North Ballard. There are a few more.
Now, Davis says when it comes to the Low Income Housing Institute in the city of Seattle, there's a lack of accountability.
Basic structure of the camp is supplied by donors and volunteers. The shacks are built sometimes off-site, sometimes on-site by third parties, and then just given to Lehigh. They're given to Lehigh, actually, not the city. And there is a lot of food donated. A lot of volunteer labor goes into upkeep for the camps, and Lehigh doesn't really account for that anywhere. So it's difficult to say how much it costs them to run these camps. And it's difficult to know even how much they're getting from the city, because the number varies wildly from one year to the next and one camp to the next. So that's not accountable. That's wrong. We can't know whether we're getting our money's worth from supporting the Shack Village model.
I'm grateful for David Preston and Safe Seattle. Here's why. Like, there's no question. You know how I am. I love the idea of getting homeless off the street. But what I don't want is just some some cutting corners and everything with these homes. I want this to be the permits. I want that to be all legit. I want these houses to be good. I just don't want any just whatever, running a mill. It looks a certain way type of deal. Mm. But then we all know that there's just kind of some money that's just going on. It just you kind of have this kind of look.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that you want to only do kind of a halfway effort on.
That's what I'm saying.
It kind of reminds me, it's one of my favorite phrases, but it's fast and wrong is still wrong. And that if you built something hastily because you feel like you're under the gun and you're trying to meet demand for it, that's one thing. But if you're just kind of building them for the sake of building them, then they're going to become a problem eventually.
If Safe Seattle is doing this and this puts the pressure on Lehigh, Low Income Housing Institute, and the city of Seattle, if this puts the pressure on them to make sure they're very transparent, showing everything, showing their permits, making sure that everything's done the right way, then I'm all for it. Then that's what Safe Seattle is for, to be the watchdog to make sure that things are being done right. Look, let's be real. Don't you wish there were some watchdogs in other parts when this city has been making decisions?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sound Transit. Anyways, we're going to move on. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the WDFW, has received 295 wolf sighting reports in 2018 alone, a few of which occurred in the greater Seattle area. Now, these are reports from the Northwest News Network. Though the department believes that some of the reports may have confused coyotes, dogs, or some wolves. Drew, I'm going to make sure before I keep going, have you seen any wolves?
I have not seen any wolves.
Have you ever seen a wolf?
No, I've seen coyotes, but I've not seen a wolf. I feel like a coyote looks like a wolf that's really down on its luck.
Okay. I treat all of them the same. I treat a dog like a wolf,
mm-hmm.
like a coyote. I believe they all got a bunch of teeth, and they all bite.
Mm.
If I don't know your dog, I am not coming around your dog. And by the way, Sammamish man living out there on the plateau.
Oh, everybody's got a dog out there.
Everybody's got a dog, and you know there be cougars and stuff running around. Mm-hmm. You know, I belong to a little community group.
You're near Cougar Mountain. I always thought it was attractive women in their 40s, but I might be wrong on that one.
Now, a recent annual report says the state of Washington has 100. I didn't know this. The state of Washington has 122 wolves in 22 packs, mostly in the northeastern part of the state. Oregon, they say, has the same amount, but Oregon has received 397 wolf sightings just this year. So according to the WDFW, they say such reports would be useful, and it would be great, but in the future, can you guys get a picture, maybe a picture of a paw print or something? Because all of these sightings, it ain't no pictures or anything. So that's what... I wouldn't know either if it was a wolf. I don't even think I would really pay attention that way. Like you said,
I think if you see a wolf, I think if you look out,
a cougar,
you're like,
a cougar, you know a cougar.
You definitely know a cougar. Well, and especially because you if you're going to see one, then it might be too late at that point. But I think with a wolf, I think the best way to differentiate is if you look at it, you're like, that's a really big dog, then it's probably a wolf.
Before we get off this topic, look, this is Cairo Nights, and I'm very transparent with you guys, even if it means at being the expense of me, talking bad about me, making fun of me. So this is a no judgment zone. David, you heard that. Now, not this summer, but last summer, I got into hiking. I was getting into hiking with some friends, went over there to Poo Poo Point and was doing some hiking. I mean, I was doing it every weekend,
mm-hmm.
that kind of hiking. I don't want you guys to laugh at me, man. But one time, when you're hiking, I feel like the reason why I fell in love with hiking, because I didn't realize, like, I don't want to sound corny when I say this, but you do kind of become one with nature.
Sure, you do. You very much feel like, you know what, we're on the exact same footing right now.
Okay, so we're good?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so you believe me?
Totally.
All right. So then, you know, you see all these people, and then people are coming down. You're like, hi. Everybody's so nice on the hiking trail, right? Not many of my delegation on the hiking trail.
No, not really.
So one time I was just doing my thinking like I always do. Again, you agree that you do a lot of thinking, you're one with nature.
Sure.
So I was thinking, and then I started to get deep into thought, and I was thinking, well, I know it's not impossible for a wild animal, one of these cougars, to come around.
Mm.
And then I got to thinking, I started really thinking too hard. And then I got to thinking, like, what if they see me and they'd be like, oh, we're not used to seeing
different meal selection.
No, right.
Oh, I got you.
Now, you guys, I'm not trying to be funny. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm trying to tell you guys. I got so scared, I actually scared myself when I was hiking because I kept truly thinking about it. Like, I'm not trying to be funny. I was actually thinking, like, man, this would be just my luck if, I mean, like, put it this way. The same feeling that sometimes I get on airplanes mm-hmm. was the same feeling I had while I was hiking. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm just not too comfortable doing
this. It is a very humbling sort of feeling when you're out in nature, when you're like, you know what? As you kind of take a look around in nature, you're like, my surroundings don't care if I live or die.
Thank you.
I am incredibly small in this big pile of rocks.
In comparison. Mm-hmm. Like no problem. I can just be done. And
very
just
unfeeling.
Soak right up into the dirt.
Yep.
This next story right here happened in Pennsylvania. It has to do with a Catholic school, not the Catholic Church. You guys remember that story that happened in out there. This story right here was this was something right there. What happened out there is a Catholic school teacher out there. It was a Catholic school teacher.
Mm-hmm. A Catholic school teacher. He was fired an unmarried teacher after she told the principal that she was pregnant with no plans to wed. ABC 27 News has more.
Nyad Reich and her boyfriend of nearly 4 years, Matt Grabowski, are expecting their first child next summer.
Extremely excited. It's one of the most rewarding things you can possibly go through.
But recently, that excitement has been overshadowed. For the past 2 years, Nyad was a high school teacher at Our Lady of Lourdes Regional School, which is a Catholic school near Shamokin. Last week, she told school administrator and former Bishop McDevitt principal, Sister Mary Ann Bedner, she was pregnant.
It was very apparent that she was not happy with the circumstances because it was, of course, a problem with Catholic morale.
Nyad and Matt are not married. The Diocese of Harrisburg had questions.
If there's no eventual plan in the near future to get married, it was either that or I had to be let go.
Nyad didn't want to be fired and understands the Catholic morality code. The couple also wants to get married on their own terms, so Nyad lost her job last Friday. A spokesperson for the diocese said, quote, "The Diocese of Harrisburg is unable to comment on personnel matters. However, as outlined in our policies, every professional employee agrees to follow the teachings, doctrine, and laws of the Catholic Church as part of the hiring process." Despite everything, Nyad and Matt have no ill will toward Our Lady of Lourdes Regional School or the Diocese of Harrisburg.
This is their beliefs and this is what their morale code and what they live by, and I understand that. Though I don't agree with it, I understand.
Many parents agree with Nyad.
I get their reasoning behind it and why they have to, but I don't agree with it. Like, I don't think it was very nice to do.
This teacher was not even Catholic. You know, and I don't care if she would have been. It still is wrong for her to lose her job.
Well, I don't know how y'all want me to answer this. I mean, if she's okay with being fired, then who am I to judge with her being fired? You just heard her get on there and say, like, hey, I'm perfectly fine with it. Me and my future husband will get married on our own time. What y'all want me to say? They shouldn't fire her? She's okay with it? Man, I'm about to start. You know what? I'm about to start minding my own business sometimes. I mean, look, she didn't look. And by the way, this is a small Catholic school. It's in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. This town has 10,000 folks in it. Mm-hmm. It's a very small town. It's probably, I'm sure, it's a small conservative town. It's a private school, Catholic school, that's right there. Can hire who they want to hire.
I guess so.
I mean, they're very transparent about it, and this is our stance. This is our statement. How do you guys expect me to be upset on whether or not she is fired or not fired when, in meanwhile, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when you had all the stuff going on with the Catholic Church and the priests and stuff, I gotta save my outrage. I can't be too mad on this, Drew. I'm just trying to tell you, man.
Yeah, I think that if she was not at least understanding of where the school was coming from, I think that might be more of an issue. But it does seem like she was pretty understanding of where their stance and opinion was. And yes, it does seem like they do make that a pretty central part of their hiring practices. But I don't know. I kind of it's not like I want to feign outrage, but I'm kind of expecting myself to have been more upset, but I'm really not, I guess.
I mean, if would you be upset if you go to fill out the application and they say you need a bachelor's degree?
No, but that, no.
I mean, it is what it is. An Ohio father's lesson on bullying has made waves around the internet today. Matt Cox of Swanton said in the Facebook video that his 10-year-old daughter, Kirsten, had been kicked out of the school bus twice for bullying another student. Thus, Cox would have had to drive Kirsten to school every single day. Instead, he used the opportunity to teach his daughter a lesson. HTVG Ohio has more.
This is my small way of trying to stop it in my household.
Matt Cox wanted to send his 10-year-old a message after she got into some trouble. Her punishment has gone viral.
This lovely lady is my 10-year-old daughter.
This video of his daughter walking to school has millions of views and hundreds of thousands of comments. You see, this isn't her normal route to school. She usually rides the bus. But Cox says she got suspended for bullying another student.
This is not the first incident. It's the second incident for the year.
So instead of driving her, he made her walk.
I'm doing what I feel is right to teach my daughter a lesson and to stop her from bullying.
To some, it may seem harsh, and he recognizes how it could be perceived. But this father of four says he had to correct her behavior.
Parents need to hold their kids accountable. So that was me showing how I'm holding my kid accountable.
Well, you missed the mark, man. You missed the mark because here's the thing. Look, however you want to discipline your child is great. But I think by you putting your child on social media, you bullying your child.
It's no longer about a private lesson. Now it's this feeling of like, look what I'm doing. Please give me an applause for what I'm doing.
I ain't feeling that. Coming up next, Stacy Joe comes in to talk Seahawks. Hope you guys are having a great night. Listen to Carol Knights. I am G. Scott. Welcome back into Cairo Knights. I am G. Scott. Happy Thursday, y'all. My good buddy Stacy Joe is here, and it always sounds just like this.
Stacy's on. Turn up the microphone. She's talking sports, so you're about to learn a ton. At 9:33, she comes in to talk with G, and you know from this song that now's the time when Stacy's on.
Stacy Joe.
G. Scott.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I just got done with some work at the VMAC. Today's kind of like a Wednesday. Well, it is like a Wednesday for the Seahawks, actually.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of weird, but I mean, I'll take it. I mean, it's almost like I'm sad about it, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think I've been getting all my work done, but it does feel like a Wednesday. It does not seem like it's Thursday. But again, I'll take it. I'm definitely looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm looking forward to covering a Monday night game at home. I like covering primetime. I don't know why. It's just, it's a little more interesting.
Tell the truth. You're just excited that you're going to be eating on Monday night. But what are you going to be eating on Sunday?
Here's the thing. I'm anticipating a great spread for this Monday night game. So on Sunday, it's just going to be normal so that I can have like 16 plates on Monday. But
oh, okay.
We'll see when we get there. Well, I'll have to update you, you know. We'll have to recap my meals Tuesday.
All right. What kind of Seahawks stuff you got for us? Today is their Wednesday. Monday night game coming up. We got the Minnesota Vikings coming into town. This is a very important game. This is a chance for the Seahawks to, I mean, they're in a driver's seat, but this is a chance to be in the driver's seat with the seatbelt on, cruising I-5.
Yeah, put on the gas.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, no, they, it's definitely, I would say of their four remaining games, it's the most important game because it's against a team that is very much in the thick of the wild card race. So the, Vikings are in the sixth seed and Seattle is in the fifth. Obviously the season isn't over. But you really want to get this win if you're Seattle, and then you can afford a loss to the Chiefs, who are going to be heavily favored and who are not in your conference. And then you aren't competing for a wild card spot with the Cardinals, and the 49ers, although you'd also like to secure those wins if you're Seattle. But this upcoming game, I would think, is probably the most crucial on their schedule. And I think lucky for Seattle, at least, they're getting some help with the return of linebacker Michael Kendricks. So if you guys remember, he was suspended. Gee, I know you and I have talked about this for a couple weeks now because it was kind of this ongoing thing with the team. And he is finally able to play this coming Monday.
Got you. Michael Kendricks, I mean, a lot of the guys are really talking about how excited they are to have him back out there. Very good player. He has been huge for them. I mean, he's been out for a little while. How many has he missed? Has he missed 7 games?
I don't think so. I know he played through week 4. And then he was eligible to return to practice in week 14, but he's eligible to return a couple weeks ago, but can play in week 14. So yeah, actually in total, that's quite a few weeks, but he had an 8-week suspension.
Gotcha. We're joined here by Stacy Joe. You can listen to or hear or read. I just went all the way confusion right there, but it doesn't matter. I ain't perfect. You can read Stacy Joe's stuff on 710 Sports, and of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Stacy Ross. All right, Stacy, is it too late to do some? What players did we need to watch? I mean, I know we're talking about Michael Kendricks. He's going to be coming back.
Yeah. It's not too late. Let's do that.
Let's do that.
He's actually one of my players to watch. I'm really curious to see how he is in his return.
All right. So we got Michael Kendricks. What do you got?
Yeah, so we've got Michael Kendricks. He's a huge one. And here's the thing. I was going to focus on Jordan Simmons, who is going to likely be filling in for DJ Fluker at right guard. But after looking up some stuff about the Vikings' run defense, I almost want to focus on, obviously, the line as a whole, but maybe even Chris Carson. Because here's the thing. The Seahawks have leaned heavily into the run, as you guys all know. And the Vikings' run defense is in the top 10 of the league. They've also forced the most fumbles, have held teams to under 100 yards a game, and the Seahawks are averaging 150, with like one exception in the last like 10 weeks. And they also haven't allowed a run of more than 21 yards. So these are all pretty big statistics if you're a run first offense. So that to me is going to be a big matchup. It's just, yes, it's Jordan Simmons in that role, but it's the line and the run game versus this Vikings front 7.
Okay. All right. And speaking of the Vikings and some of their strength, I don't want to take away from what you're going to be talking about as far as who to be watching, but their wide receivers are pretty good.
They're no joke.
Yeah, Diggs, Thielen, and of course, Kirk Cousins can throw the ball. Is that something to be paying attention to as well?
Absolutely. So my third player to watch is also just a position group, and that's the secondary. So you're keeping an eye on, yes, cornerback Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers, but also Bradley McDougal, who gets involved back there. Tedrick Thompson will probably be out there a little bit. Maybe even Delano Hill if they have an extra DB over there. Justin Coleman, Nickel, obviously. So it's going to be up to them to really try to keep Thielen and Diggs from going off. And it's going to be really hard. I mean, Thielen is just having a phenomenal season. And Diggs is always good. So I think it'll be one of the more interesting battles. I think of the teams that we've watched, it's been a couple weeks since I think it's been like you're blown away by some deep completions. But I think that there is a risk that you run of giving up some big plays to players like that. It just mistakes happen in a game, and these players are really good receivers.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a different feeling right now. And what I mean by that is I remember the feeling going to Carolina. I remember the feeling of getting ready to play the Chargers here at home. And I felt like those feelings were, oh, man, yeah. You know, they're just going to give it the best they got and, you know, got to play the game. Yeah. And I know what the experts are saying. But this right here, a Vikings team who early on was talked about as being one of the top teams in the NFC. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems and feels as if the Seahawks are going to be the bullies come this Monday night.
No, I was just talking about that with someone else because it's so interesting in general to see how the narrative of the Seahawks team has shifted from facing their, not just their longest Super Bowl odds, but people being like, is this Pete Carroll's final year? And just seeing a franchise what on the outside looked like turmoil for the first time in what had been a really stable 6 or 7 years. And it ended up being not just an impressive season for a lot of young players, but they're in the thick of the wild card race. Obviously, they aren't taking the division that's already gone to the Rams, but they're, like you said earlier, in the driver's seat. So I am kind of with you on this one. I would expect the Seahawks to be favored. I don't know if they officially are. I'm assuming they have the home field advantage already, but the Vikings have also lost a couple players to injury, and the Seahawks, I don't know if you felt this way, but I felt like in watching the game against the 49ers last week, that didn't it seem like they were just more hard hitting? Like I remember writing notes that said hard hitting, big tackles. It just felt like they were really bringing a little bit extra with that game. It was interesting.
I had Austin Calitro on with me for Driving with G, and the conversation we talked about the crowd at the stadium. Right. And yes, the 12s are always there. The fans, it's loud, it's sold out. That's always how the Seahawks go. But in the past, when they were really dominant, the crowd, mm-hmm. it was turned up at the notch of a 20 out of 10.
Right. Right.
This past game against the 49ers, it was back at that level again. It's something about the confidence in this Seahawks team.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I know Pete Carroll at his presser. I don't know if it was, were you watching, you probably weren't watching the TV broadcast because you were probably at the stadium too, but
right.
I know some people were saying during the TV broadcast that they were saying the crowd, did they say the crowd wasn't as loud as they were expecting? I don't know. They said something that I was brought up several times later by Carroll in kind of like a, well, they don't know what they're talking about kind of way, but it was interesting because I didn't get that impression from sitting in the press box at all. Like on Bobby Wagner's return, it felt like the press box was shaking a little bit. But yeah, that was, I don't know if the people on the broadcast felt that fans weren't as loud, but I mean, Carroll certainly called for as much energy as fans can bring for Monday night. So maybe they'll respond.
All right, Stacey Jo, tomorrow we'll do this again. Get ready to wrap up. Get ready for the Seahawks game on Monday night. Stacey? I can't believe you just did that just now.
I was waiting. I was just kind of like, yep, and then I just waited there.
What was that?
Nope, we aren't cutting it out. Just
Stacey Jo.
I don't know what it was. I was thinking about soup. I still have some soup left in this like pan that I was heating up, and I was just kind of thinking about it because I have some in this bowl, and I'm like, well, is there enough left to justify heating up again? I don't know. I'm kind of having this inner monologue going on in my brain.
Stacey Jo.
I really dropped the ball.
Get out of here. Talk to you tomorrow. You guys have been listening to Cairo Nights. Coming up next, it's time to jump in the hole. It's time for the carpool lane. I'm G. Scott. Welcome back into Cairo Nights. I am G. Scott. Happy Thursday to you. I can't believe it's already Thursday. All day today. All I kept thinking was like, oh, it's Wednesday, but it's weird. I know I'm not the only one. This week flew by, but that's okay. I'm just glad that we're one day closer to the weekend, and we're good with that. It's time to jump in the carpool lane. The carpool lane is a time where we all jump in the car and we ride together, a time where it's positive talk. And I like this part of the show because it kind of helps me to unwind a little bit and you get to hear some positive words because a lot of negativity going on in this world. Today I was thinking about entrepreneurs and something that I've always been my entire life. And one thing about entrepreneurs is tough, right? Like it is really tough, especially when you're just 100% entrepreneur, somebody that maybe you might sell cars, maybe you might be a real estate agent, mortgage, or something that's just 100% commission. And to the business owners that are out there, hey, tip of the cap to you. I know what that's like. I have been there. But I wanted to come up and talk about seven principles that will kind of ensure, I won't say all the way success, but in a little bit more of success when you do some of these things. And number one is adding more value than anyone else and the success for follow. And I know that when you value what it is that you do, that is pretty huge. I know when I had my car detailing service, it was the value, right? Like I felt that my service, I mean, I'm not trying to say it. I mean, of course, sometimes you try to say that you're better than everybody else, but it wasn't even about being better than everyone. It was just about like, hey, there are other services that are out there, but you know what? I bring a value and I appreciate the value that I bring as well. Number two, if you're doing it for money, you've already lost. That's something you learn real quick. If you're just doing this stuff just for the money, you better have a little bit of love. There has to be something that helps you sustain some of the tough times, because I'm telling you, it's not always about the money. Number three, give your all and give it consistently. I think that's a very hard one right there, being consistent in everything that you do. Sometimes you have good months and sometimes you have bad months. But and the hardest thing, too, is when you know, like, for example, me, car detailing, I know that in November and December, I know that those months are going to be lean months. So sometimes I wouldn't have the effort because I would know that it's already going to be a bad month anyway. But no, you gotta attack that month. I had to attack that month as if it was going to be June or July month where the weather is really good. So got to be consistent. Number four, if it doesn't feel right, it's not right. And I think that goes with business relationships and customers and clients and everything. Sometimes, you know what they say, all money isn't good money. Sometimes those relationships might not be a good relationship for you or for that other person. So if it doesn't feel right, it's not right. Number five, it's always quality over quantity. And, you know, when you start, for me, there were times when I used to try to, you know, put out, I remember when Groupon came out and I wanted to get on Groupon and get my services to so many people. And boy, that was really hard because then there was a lot of business that came in, but I felt like we spread ourselves thin and we didn't do a good job. And I think the quality kind of went down, but the quantity, we had a lot of customers. So that wasn't always good either. Number six, they kind of talk about right here, work on yourself. Practice what you preach. Continue to work on you. Look, if you're the entrepreneur and you're the business owner or and everything, hey, your business is all you. You're a reflection of everything that goes on in your business, from clean car to clean person, everything. You are the reflection. So make sure you work on yourself. Make sure you're mentally together. Make sure you're taking your vacations, getting some time off so you're not so crazy and everything. So work on yourself. And last but not least, number seven, pay attention. Pay attention to what is working. Pay attention to what is not working. And make sure you write that down and journal it down. Because sometimes you might be spinning your wheels and you might be have found out you've been doing something wrong for the last 2 years. And if you would have paid attention, you could have been done in 2 months. 2 months is better than 2 years. Well, that's been fun. I hope you guys have a great Thursday. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 7 o'clock. You've been listening to Kyra Knights. I appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. I'm G. Scott. Be good.